A Matter of Spirit is the quarterly justice journal of the Intercommunity Peace and Justice Center. This lead article appeared in the fall 2019 issue on childhood. Childhood in the Age of Gun Violence by Samantha Yannity and Tali Raviv, Ph.D. Samantha Yannity is the editor for A Matter of Spirit and Justice Educator at IPJC. She recently received a Master of Divinity, an MA in Social Justice at Loyola University, Chicago. Tali Raviv, Ph.D., is the Associate Director of the Center for Childhood Resilience in the Department of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry at Ann and Robert H. Laurie Children's Hospital of Chicago, and is also Assistant Professor at Feinberg School of Medicine at Northwestern University. We had to duck and even shield the children from stray bullets a time or two. These were perhaps the most startling words uttered to me during a job interview. While in graduate school at Loyola University Chicago, I was interviewing for a part-time position at a Catholic school at turf intersections of rival gang from the back of the yards and Englewood neighborhoods in the heart of Chicago's South Side. The needs of the school far surpassed what I could ever hope to offer them, having never experienced gun violence myself, but I will probably carry those words in my heart with me forever. These two neighborhoods where the school sits, particularly Englewood, pop up regularly in the media alongside phrases bloodshed and violence. As spectators, held captive by the theatrics of shock and awe politics and sensationalized news stories, we often get caught up in stimuli. But do we pause to stop and think about the lasting effects on the communities themselves? Mass shootings often grab the headlines, but the reality is that violence happens everywhere, and for many people, as I learned in Chicago, it occurs more frequently than what is reported. Children in Chicago face violence at alarming rates, and that violence has a lasting emotional, physical, and psychological impact. A report from the Erickson Institute, released in 2019, details that there are 176,319 children in Chicago under the ages of 5, and 60% of them have experienced more than 3 homicides. To frame this another way, by kindergarten, more than half of Chicago's children will have witnessed or experienced a minimum of 3 homicides in their short life. This is not high school or college. Kindergarten. Having worked with children in direct support, I witnessed the impact of trauma in the behavior of children in the forms of tantrums or outbursts, but I never got to go beneath the surface of that trauma with the children. To answer some of these of my gnawing questions, I contacted Tali Raviv, Ph.D., the Associate Director of the Center for Childhood Resilience at the Ann and Robert H. Laurie Children's Hospital of Chicago, to shed some light on the lasting impact of pervasive violence. Dr. Raviv shared that trauma saturates more of our beings than we might realize. All of us experience stress daily, and as a species, we have learned to adapt to stress as a means to survive. The experience of stress is our body's biological response to natural threats. Naturally, as adaptive beings, we have the capacity to adjust to an array of experiences and conditions due to our innate stress response, that is, fight or flight, that has kept us alive for millennia. When we respond to stress, our survival instinct kicks in. Dr. Reeve explained, "If I step off a curb and I see a car blowing the stop sign, without thinking, my flight or fight response kicks in and allows me to jump back and onto the curb, without really stopping to think about it, just acting on instinct." For most of us, as Dr. Revive pointed out, after responding to the shock of the car, our brains can adjust and communicate to our body that the threat is gone, and our bodies and brains return to baseline. Dr. Revive pointed out that for children living in persistently violent environments, fight-or-flight response triggers occur more easily and more often, and they take longer to return to baseline after the perceived threat has passed. Dr. Revive gave the example that if a child exposed to trauma goes to school and someone drops a book, the sound might remind the child's brain of a gunshot, sending a signal that it communicates to the body and brain of the child, "I am in danger." Even when the child realizes that was just a book, not a gunshot, it may take longer for the stress response to abate and for the child's body and brain to return to baseline. For children living with persistent and ongoing threats of violence, Dr. Revive pointed out that many small or seemingly insignificant incidents, like a raised voice, a loud or crowded auditorium, being inadvertently bumped in the hallway, can trigger the fight-or-flight response. Frequent exposure to violence can force the brain into survival mode, causing the brain to respond to all stresses as if they were larger and more dangerous threats like gunshots. We also carry chronic stress and trauma in our physical bodies. Dr. Revive explained that when our body enters into constant flight-or-fight response, our immune and digestive systems can shut down, and inflammatory processes are triggered. This is part of an adaptive process, directing all resources to survival and allowing our bodies to be maximally prepared for danger. Now there are scientific studies linking the stress response and chronic inflammation to cancers, heart disease, and all kinds of autoimmune disorders. The long-term result, as we are learning, particularly in marginalized communities, is intergenerational trauma. Dr. Revive noted that stress can even occur prenatally, and the stress of the mother can be transmitted from the mother to the child in utero, resulting in low birth weights, developmental delays, and other health concerns. As adults, we have the capacity and the responsibility to foster resiliency in children. If we want to change the culture, we have to begin with how we engage with children. The pathway to building resilient children begins with providing a safe space and healthy relationships with supportive and stable adults. In addition, we must nurture and cultivate a child's strengths and gifts or assets, as Dr. Revive defined them. Identifying a child's assets, whether athletic or academic talents, and then allowing them to develop, allows the child to flourish. When children are able to develop their assets within a healthy and nurturing environment, they can develop the social-emotional skills that will allow them to grow into emotionally healthy and loving adults. We must also invest in community resources such as safe parks, after-school activities, faith communities, and libraries. If we want to create a better world for children, we need to model healthy behavior, give them the safe spaces they deserve, and allow them to live in a world that does not require them to duck from stray bullets.